I'm Nell Frizzell, and this is The Panic Years. When I was 28, everyone around me seemed to be getting married, getting promotions, buying houses, and having babies. I was single, redundant, and living with my mum. At the time, I thought it was a private crisis. Now I understand it was just my panic years, and that is what this podcast is all about. I'm sitting in a reed bed. The floods have receded, but my arse will inevitably be damp when I stand up. This week I went for a walk with my old English teacher from school, who I'm delighted to say has read my book. I was incredibly nervous handing it over to him. It was like showing him the world's longest piece of homework, but I'm pleased to say I passed. He liked it. My guest this week is the author, podcaster and journalist Pandora Sykes. Pandora was the co-host of the phenomenal podcast The High Low. She presents a podcast called The Missing and has her own podcast, Doing It Right, in which she interviewed some brilliant brains all about modern life. I was thrilled to interview Pandora all about the flattened female identity of motherhood, how we lump together, reduce or dismiss mothers into one homogenous group, and how that impacts everyone, really, including people who are thinking about having a baby or who have had a baby already. She covered this brilliantly in her best-selling book, How Do We Know That We're Doing It Right, which is out now. Our whole chat was like having my brain massaged by a friend, and I really hope you enjoy it as much as I did. Also, stick around after the interview because I'll be talking in a little bit more detail to an expert guest. How are you and how is your body?
My body is still attached. That's my barometer now. Attached, or is it like in Chaucer's time when you had to carry your bits around in a basket? And I haven't had to carry my bits around in a basket yet. So I'm all right, thanks.
Can you imagine a sort of like cantilever situation down there? It's quite scary. It's really nice to know that you also feel like your body is just something that you're sort of floating, hazing around. And I have to actually think about that answer to that question every time I ask someone, because it's like, how is my body? You actually wrote something brilliant where you said that being pregnant, you were hovering outside of yourself, waiting for the real me to return, which I thought was such a brilliant description of that strange transient time where your body is completely overwhelmed and it doesn't really feel like you are more in it than you've ever been before.
I think Alexandra Hemmingsley said it really well recently when she was writing a piece, and she said that her body was merely a theatre for the drama.
That's really good.
I was like, that's such a good way of putting it, because of that kind of feeling that obviously your body's got, when you're pregnant, great purpose that it wouldn't necessarily have when you're not pregnant. So you kind of feel like it's on loan. Well, it is on loan to someone else, isn't it? They take all the good bits.
I felt that. I really felt like I was in a timeshare I hadn't signed up for and I didn't know how to unsubscribe from. And then when I finally weaned my child when he was about 28 years old, it felt like, I was like, oh yeah, that's what this felt like. I had completely forgotten that's what this sort of fleshy lump was like before someone else was surviving off it. I thought that my body would feel like my body the moment he was out. And actually it took an awful lot longer than that. I really, really wanted to talk to you because I found your chapter about the flattening of women completely electrifying. Do you want to describe what you meant when you used the word?
I think what I meant by it is that when you become a mother, your whole identity is subsumed into that of the mother, and you're seen as this one social group that has the same social ideals, political ideals, even the way they look. And actually, as demographics go, that's a demographic that's a lot more inclusive to women like you and me, Nell, because that cliche of that mother tends to be middle class and white. And so it's kind of staggering that before I Am Not Your Baby Mother, there wasn't a book out there about black motherhood until Candice Brathwaite wrote that. So not only is it an extremely exclusive ideal or idea, but it also doesn't serve even, I don't think it even serves necessarily the people who are meant to belong to it the most. And I just found it quite strange that you could play golf and still be the same person. But you can't. Golf is always my go-to. It's so weird. But if you have a child, then suddenly you have to be exactly the same. Not just personality type, because that's fine. I think you can brush that off. The political thing, the idea that you would all be concerned with the same things and in exactly the same way, and the kind of eye rolling, oh, she would say that, she's a mother. Or just also the sidelining of women as mothers. I was reading an interview with an MP. She was saying how much abuse she'd got for not only having a baby, but also for taking 4 weeks off. And it was unbelievable, she said, the abuse. People were furious that she'd chosen that job when she was of a mothering age.
Wow. That's something I remember Mary Beard writing about, how she kept turning up to things to sort of prove that she could. She'd keep turning up to her sort of all of the committees that she was part of and all the sort of boards that she was working on. And I remember her using the phrase that her breasts would be exploding with milk and she'd be absolutely exhausted and she'd turn up, and all that they would comment on was that she'd leave early or like she wouldn't stay for the any other business. And you sort of think like the sort of performance of being the pre-mother self isn't even appreciated by the people that it's aimed at. So why do we carry on doing that? The idea that you can't be professional and a mother at the same time, so you have to turn up and be exclusively professional and ignore the fact that you're a mother at the same time, it's just, it's so offensive.
And it doesn't serve anyone. It doesn't, it certainly doesn't serve the women who, as we know, so often struggle to get back the foothold that they had in their careers. It doesn't serve the men who also have children, yet we don't think about a man having a child in the same way as a woman, even though statistically most of the time they're also involved in the having of the child. And it also doesn't serve the women that don't have children. We're not on opposing sides.
The division between people who've had children and people who haven't had children only comes about if we treat the having of children in a very particular way, which, like you say, doesn't actually serve most of the people who will do it or won't do it.
I think where there is a division, and this is a division I'm interested in because I think it requires a lot more empathy and sensitivity than we kind of culturally are able to do or at a point of doing yet, is that women who are struggling to have children or have not been able to have them and desperately want them might find things about women with children or the images of those women and children very difficult.
Yeah, I talked to someone the other day about when she was trying to get pregnant, she would feel very hurt by friends who were pregnant, even though they were not hurting her. You know, there was absolutely no intention to make her feel sad. And she said this brilliant thing, which is that her expression of that might be that she'd put one kiss at the end of a message rather than two, which for her was like a real big signal, like a huge stand-up row about the way that she was feeling, that they would just not have noticed. And so I think we're scared of expressing it because we think it's going to be an unbearable weight to put on the other person. But actually, sometimes the communication is much more subtle and it will still give you that sort of catharsis of feeling that you've had your say and you've, you know, you've stood up for yourself a bit.
I think sometimes as well, it can be impossible to, you're going to have different points of view sometimes. There's a drama that I absolutely loved on Netflix, a dramedy, as they call it, called Home for Christmas. Have you heard of that one?
Mm-mm.
Oh, it's divine. It's honestly so heartwarming at a not particularly heartwarming time. And it's about this Norwegian woman who doesn't have a partner and children and all the rest of her family and all of her friends do. And she's only 30, but still it's like, when are you going to settle down?
Right.
But it kind of subverts all of the cliches in very charming ways. She's at this lunch where she says, oh, I'm really tired. And her friends with babies go, oh, you don't know tiredness until you have a baby. And she says, well, isn't tiredness tiredness? And you can see that she's just a bit frustrated. And I could see both sides. I could see how incredibly annoying it was having them quite smugly saying, well, you don't know what real tiredness is. Mm. And then I could see from their point of view of them wanting to sort of impress that they didn't have a second for themselves and they were exhausted. And it was just like the clashing of exhaustion. I could just see both sides. I could see why it was really annoying from both sides.
I don't seem to have as much time for existential angst as I used to have, which is, I don't know if that's a blessing or a curse, but I certainly noticed that I don't have time to sort of worry about my own popularity anymore because I every couple of hours have to wipe someone's bum. I wanted to pick up on something that sort of we were talking about the flattening of motherhood. And I remember really clearly when my child was only a month or two old, saying quite shamefaced to a friend, "I don't really feel like a mum yet. I just feel like someone who's had a baby." And she said, what do you mean? And I said, "I'm not wearing flat boots. I don't have pearly pink lipstick. I don't have a straw bag that jangles. I don't have a big keyring. I can't drive." And I reeled off this list of things from the top of my head that for me signified mother. And I just wondered what your thoughts about how that trope affects the way we make decisions about whether to have children or not.
I think some of the things around whether or not to have children are not cliche so much as they are inevitabilities. Where the kind of monolithic view of motherhood, I think, is quite dangerous is where it assumes that you won't be able to make kind of independent decision, that you would automatically always side with another woman because she's a mother, that you would agree with a politician's policy about women because she's a mother, or that you'd always be on the side of something that benefits a mother. That mother's also many other things aside from a mother. So there might be something that benefits a mother, but if she's a completely unspeakable person, you might not support the thing around it. So I suppose to the people who are wondering about being a mother, I think you have to bring it back, don't you, to that very basic thing of why do I want children and what part of myself am I worried about losing? And then that becomes like an active thing in your brain. I think I was so worried about it, though, that I probably went the other way and I didn't want to be part of any WhatsApp group chats because I didn't want to worry about my parenting. And I thought I would if I was part of this like communal kind of collective communication. And also I'd heard other people saying they're actually feeding them X, Y, Z. And I'd always think, oh my God, I don't want to doubt myself over things I wouldn't have otherwise doubted. So I then kind of did the other thing where actually I could have maybe lent more into the mushy stuff. You know, there's nothing wrong with, I think in hindsight, I don't know if you feel this, I was like, I now realise that you can have a period of time where you maybe feel a bit absent from your life or yourself, and it's not a bad thing in the long run.
I was fixated with the idea that my child wouldn't fall asleep on people, wouldn't need to be fed to sleep, wouldn't need to be moving. I was like, I have to get him to lie down in a Moses basket so I can work, because if I'm not working, I'm not really here anymore. And, you know, going out every single day and trying to not carry on at all. I did lean in quite heavily to this sort of purpose, like, oh gosh, I'm so busy. Look at me, I'm so busy. And I'm actually really busy in something that we sideline as a culture. And I think it's really important that I talk about it endlessly to bring it into the light, blah, blah, blah. But actually, I don't know if I really achieved that much with that drive. I don't know whether it benefited me or my son. It just gave me a sense of purpose that I think I was quite frightened of losing. My worry about the NCT WhatsApp group, I was convinced that all the other women had set up their own WhatsApp group without me in it because they would find me so distasteful.
It does happen. Splinter groups.
I know, it happens. And I've heard of NCT groups where some of them go on holiday together and don't tell the others.
I don't like drama like that. You know, when it feels like you're back at school.
Yes, yeah, very tribal.
But that's the thing. There is, I think, this tribal element. And again, that's always been something that I've wanted to resist. You know, something that I never did as a journalist or haven't really done so far. I don't think I will. I don't know. Maybe I'll change my mind. Is that I never really wrote about those kind of quite loaded topics like weaning and breastfeeding and sleep and routine, is because I didn't want to kind of feed it's just so noisy, that online community of this is the right thing to do and this isn't.
And it is incredibly reductive. I mean, this is another kind of flattening. I knew a woman, she was an obstetrician, a doctor, and very scientifically minded. And I remember her saying, because she used cloth nappies and she had her children in a sling and she breastfed them until they were maybe a year old, lots of people assumed she wasn't going to vaccinate her children. And she was like, I'm a doctor. Like, what? Why would you think that? She had obviously ticked these other demographic keys. They'd be like, oh, well, she's obviously going to be like a rampant anti-science anti-vaxxer. It's like, no, I just wash my nappies. That's all I'm doing. I think the monolith also means there's a tendency, particularly for white middle-class educated women like me, to think that they have to wait until they've achieved absolutely everything they were hoping to achieve in one area of their life before they have children.
I think that's the having it all myth, isn't it? Is that you have to have all your ducks in a row before you have children. And also that when you have children, that's just the end. You just get older.
Yeah.
There's no kind of adventure. I think you can feel like that as the mother. And I also think people on the outside can do that. I think there can be an assumption that if you pursue a conventional lifestyle, that you are very sort of smug with it, that you've ticked all the boxes and that you've got life figured out. That, I would say, is a big assumption about being a mother, is that you suddenly have life figured out and you know exactly what you're doing. And of course, there can be a clarity that motherhood brings, but I'm less sure about whether or not there's a clarity from becoming a mother, although birth is, of course, an extraordinary act, or whether or not there's just a clarity in huge, often traumatic, life-changing decisions. Is it specifically having a child that makes you into this person? Or is it just that that's the most common sort of earth-shattering milestone?
Yeah, if I suddenly took on another caring responsibility, or if I retrained as a surgeon and was suddenly being confronted with the sort of life or death decisions every day, would my outlook on the world change? Of course it would. I don't have to have pushed anyone out from my body. I don't have to expel a human to suddenly change my aspect on things like how much time we have on this earth or what change I can affect in the world. You can actually reach those things through other means. And I think that's the thing about where, as you put it in your book, mothers and non-mothers get pitted against each other by forces outside of themselves. I think it's often that feeling that you can't get there unless you have a baby. But actually, it depends where you think there is. If there is someone who looks at the world in a different way to how they did in their teens and 20s, then hopefully everyone gets there.
Also, there's this idea as well with the mothers and the non-mothers that being maternal, it means only right. that you have yearned for children and then that you have children. And you can be maternal and you can have a great aptitude for mothering and be a very nurturing person, having never had children and perhaps never having them. It's not synonymous with birth. And I think sometimes I find quite funny when I slink beneath the line on like the Daily Mail or something like that. And there's just always this assumption that you are kinder when you're a mother, and Some of the bickering you hear about at the school gates would suggest that is not true. So I think you can have a child and still be a complete tit, and you can not have a child and be the most generous, nurturing, maternal presence in all of your friends and family's lives.
You're absolutely right. And it also makes me think of when you talk about flattening and you have these various archetypes that women are sort of homogenized into, therefore to be sold to in a more efficient way. I was thinking about how in my 20s, I genuinely had internalized this thought that to be sexy or ambitious or fun, I had to also be unmaternal. So I sort of tucked away my hunger to one day have a family, or actually to quite soon have a family, because I thought somehow that would be a contradiction, even though it's not. We just present them as contradictions. It's, you strike me as someone who that flattening just didn't work on.
I always knew that I wanted children. I definitely think I was quite naive about how young parenthood and ambition would collide. I think I've experienced what probably lots of women do in their 30s, of sort of their busiest work time also being the time when they were procreating. So it's like sort of everything at once. But the thing about it not being cool to say, you know, I really want a child, what's quite interesting is I still witness that on social media quite a lot. It's funny to see that it just repeats. You know, that every generation will look at the people older than them and be like, oh, well, they would say that because they've got children and, you know, they always think that they've got it worse. Or it's just funny to see.
And it's also funny to see, I think, now when so many people's lives have shrunk to their immediate sort of domestic situation, that when that happened, the things that were considered more culturally weighty and significant, films, music, fashion, those things. When I worked in an office, the people who talked about their children were seen as incredibly lame, and the people who talked about their trainers were seen as incredibly cool. And it's really funny to see how now people aren't really going out and they're not doing a huge amount of shopping and they're not going to really great restaurants. And so there's a sort of equilibrium has been achieved where it's like, oh, what are you going to talk about? Your flatmate. I'm going to talk about my flatmate. My flatmate comes up to my knees. Your flatmate, you know, is a designer. We're all in the same boat.
I think that's very interesting, because when I asked people in lockdown how they were feeling, a lot of people who had recently had children said, well, I spent, you know, 95% of my time in my house anyway. So their kind of physical parameters were very limited anyway. Mm-hmm. So that's perhaps something interesting.
I've got lots of friends now who are in the first 6 months of having a baby, and I cannot remember for the life of me what that was like. But I like to tell them the things that I think and feel, because it just shows that I think that's a subject worth engaging with. A friend was discussing, she said, oh, my son can sit up now. And I said, oh, so what does he actually do when he sits up? Like, how does he play with his toys? Talk to me about what he looks like when he's playing his toys.
And I just can't remember. Yeah,
I don't remember. But also I remember at the time thinking, why is no one asking me about what I do all day?
Yes, yes, you're right. Those tiny, I know what you mean, actually. And it's so easy to become so distant from it, because we've got children, I think, who are similar ages. So you're now getting into the chatting stage, which is so immediately and endlessly rewarding. You've sort of forgotten how you would be absolutely thrilled by them learning to turn over, even though objectively that's quite dull for anyone else.
Yeah.
But you're right. I would have been thrilled about that and probably expected everyone to ask me about it. And so you have to remember to do that.
You've written in the book, the flattening of women is a key element of consumer capitalism. Women who have been flattened are so much easier to sell to. And I wanted to ask you, the monolith of motherhood, do we sell mothers, or are we making mothers to sell to?
Well, undoubtedly, there is a gadget that you could buy off the internet every single day, which would make your life as a parent of a baby much easier. And I'm not going to deny that I think I probably bought quite a few of those. I mean, all these things are fun. And actually, I relish the opportunity to have these little gadgets and gizmos that make life a bit easier. You know, my mum's endlessly fascinated by them, and not in a patronising, well, we never did things like that, in a God, how great that you have so many solutions. I don't know. Do you think we sell motherhood? Is that aspirational now? I would say for Gen Z, so many of them don't want children because, you know, they say it's not an environmentally friendly decision.
I do. Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think we still sell the idea, as much as un-PC as it is, I think we still sold the idea that that you will never be a fully actualized woman, and it's always on women until you have had a child. There's a deeper argument about, you know, do we do that in order to keep women in their place? Is motherhood a tool of oppression? I think that's a bit stark, personally. Mm. Or is it just that we want to generate our own experience in the next generation? So parents are desperate for grandchildren because they liked being parents, and so they want to see their children being parents.
I agree. I personally don't see it as a tool of oppression, but that's my bias. I have found it and have witnessed in others how enriching it is. Doesn't mean I think it's enriching for everyone. And certainly I think there are people that regret having children. I think there are vanishingly few who talk about that, which I understand. That's a hard thing to admit to, but not completely out there.
I think the closest I ever got to admitting it was saying to Nick, my partner, I'm really worried I've ruined your life. And he was like, I'm worried that you think you've ruined your life.
It's true. I like the way you put that back on you.
There was a period where it felt like I had ruined my life, but I couldn't bear to see that straight on. And I'm talking about the first 3 weeks where I was like, I literally cannot finish a sentence because my whole vocabulary has disappeared. My body is leaking. I'm crying all the time. Like, this doesn't feel good. But I couldn't psychologically bear the burden of that. So I used to look at my partner and think, oh my God, he has no freedom left. He has no choice. He's sad and tired and he hasn't eaten a proper meal and I've ruined his life. And I think I was really lucky in that I was able to express that to enough people that it then dissipates like all feelings. And then you're free to accept the next feeling, which is, oh my God, I'm really responsible and I'm doing this all on autopilot. The negative feelings come in waves. And I think resisting one too hard just means you get stuck in it, maybe.
Do you think something I'm kind of interested in is I'm interested in this idea that we're making life as kind of friction-free and seamless as possible, and actually that isn't necessarily good for us, that we need those kind of small obstructions sometimes for something to feel satisfying, and also we need to like slow down the rate. I wonder if, because we're so used to things being easy, and I think we expect now to feel great as well. Like, I often feel a bit rough in my body and I think, oh, this is a bit worrying. Why do I feel like that? And then I think, well, you feel like that because you've got 2 children under 3 and you're not taking care of yourself. It's not a big deal. You'll figure it out. But I think now that I have to feel wonderful because of all the sort of body as a temple wellnessy stuff out there. And I wonder if motherhood, if it's almost made the experience of having children, like I'm talking about very run-of-the-mill, average, non-traumatic kind of births and raising of young children, do we sort of pathologize it and worry about it more because life has become objectively easier? Like, my mum just assumed that she would be exhausted and feel like...
That's a really good question. Is it also the idea of sacrifice has become so incredibly unpopular?
Yeah. And duty.
Duty, compromise, sacrifice. Yeah.
Duty's very unpopular. It's all don't reply to this text if it doesn't make you feel good.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I was brought up by a mother who was like, her sense of duty was like exhaustive and still is.
I think there is an expectation that everything is pleasurable. And if it's not pleasurable, either someone else is to blame or you can purchase your way into it being better. And the one brilliant thing about parenthood is that you can't buy your way out of it. Like, you know, obviously money helps enormously. If you can earn enough money that you can employ childcare or you can afford a decent sized house with a garden and food and all of those basic things, then yeah, you're having a much, much easier time. But a screaming baby cannot be paid to stop screaming.
Totally.
And so they're like the tiny little anti-capitalist machines in their own right.
You can't buy a charming child.
No, no.
It's an interesting one about control, isn't it? I have quite mixed feelings about birth plans for that reason, because I know that so many people don't get the birth plan they want and that can make them feel like they lost control and that something was taken from them. Whereas birth plans, I suppose, are kind of only ever like a dream scenario, an idea of, I don't know, even their existence makes me a bit nervous. I think it's great to feel like you have agency over your birth. But I wonder, are we meant to have agency during our birth? Isn't there a surrendering? I'm sort of unsure where makes me a bit uncomfy.
Yeah. Well, I had this amazing consultant because like one side of my placenta basically crapped out fairly early on. And so there were lots of things in my pregnancy, that like teeny tiny worries that sort of escalated to make me feel sort of a bit more anxious than I think I had expected to. And I remember saying to this consultant, so does this mean that I can't have this kind of birth or whatever? And she said this amazing thing. As modern women, we think we can control everything, our relationships, our jobs, our bodies, but actually having a child, you have no control here. And she said, your child might be brilliant, they might not. They might be healthy, they might not. And at this stage, when they were unborn, there's nothing you can do. I'm thinking, oh, you'd have to have been in that job for a long time to have the courage to say that to another woman. But it's true. Like, it's been the single greatest lesson in losing control I've ever had. this guy, he's just like an agent of disruption for everything I do. He's like the Lord of Misrule. I can say this orange is orange and he'll say, no, this orange is green, and then he'll throw it at the wall. I've got no control here. I've got no authority in my own home.
I had that same kind of pragmatic presence. I was so extremely lucky to have this pragmatic presence in my sister, who's a midwife. So it was quite funny because I think she probably punctured, not in a bad way, but just by dint of her own experience and doing her job, quite a lot of those first mother, you know, well, my baby moves more apparently than other babies do, or my tummy's bigger than anyone else's has ever been in the world, or, you know, all these things. And she'd just distinctly remind me all the time, which is good. No, you're completely average. There's absolutely nothing interesting. Nothing interesting. She completely accepted that it was fascinating to me. I was so lucky to have that presence. Sort of like having, I suppose, my own personal doula, but she was also a midwife and she was at both of my births as well. And I think maybe that's why I feel that way about birth plans, because hearing about all the babies that she delivered, or hearing her thoughts, which are always very you know, they're very gently put across, but she really stressed that I didn't really have a clue what I was doing and that that was fine because everyone else did. And I still feel like that to this day. I may have given birth twice, but that doesn't mean I know anything about birth. It's like driving a car twice and saying that you know everything about the Volkswagen dealership. And I think people do that when they have babies, don't they? They say, you know, someone with a new baby will go, and then this thing happened, and someone with a baby will say, oh yeah, that's the mucus plug, and that occurs between like da 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 and da da da.
Yes, this is when the cervix is exactly at this point of dilation. That's when you feel.
I don't know. I wasn't down there.
But also, I've never been in anyone else's body. I have no idea. I have no idea what that felt like for them.
Totally.
Just to sort of sum up, I think you write something that you wrote that I thought, whoa, that's really interesting. You wrote, I instantly loved being a mother, but I rejected the social identity of motherhood. And I wondered, how was that going? How do you feel about that now?
Less rejecting, I think. I think something you said earlier is something I think a lot about now, is that I only now feel like I'm actually mothering. I'm having to make decisions that I didn't have to make. I didn't realise then, but when I first had babies, I've got two of them, and when they're first born, it was just about keeping them fed and changed and clothed and occasionally bathed, but that didn't really matter. And now, with an almost three-year-old, there are so many decisions to make. Like, how do I want to raise her? How do I want her to ask for things? Do I want her to say, could I have that? Or please, may I have that? You know, there are all these, and she might not do either, by the way. That's just, you know, what I'm trying to put forward. So I'm actually actively mothering, I think, a lot more. And I've started reading books like How to Talk to Little Kids or How Emotions Are Made. Like, I'm in a real, like, I need to learn. So I'm very porous in that sense. I might not like belonging to a WhatsApp group, but I'm really interested to hear from people who are a bit further along in the journey, especially when I feel like, I don't have a clue what I do in this scenario.
On my part, I do now own some flat boots and I do have quite a big key ring and I've got some tinted lip balm. So I basically am now the social identity of mother. I still can't drive, but I've got a bike seat.
I was about to say, have you learned to drive?
So in an apocalyptic situation, I'm having to sort of jog.
Cycle
with my child.
On your penny farthing.
On my penny farthing, away from danger. So I'm basically there.
As my conversation with Pandora showed, sometimes the trickiest part of early parenthood is losing that sense of who you really are while in the throes of looking after someone else. Sarah McCullen is the Director of Impact and Engagement at the National Childbirth Trust. So I wanted to ask Sarah, during those vital first 1,000 days, what can we do to protect our mental health and our sense of identity while looking after a baby?
As pregnant people, we think about and prepare for birth, but we can sometimes lose sight of what's going to come next and the rest of those first 1,000 days. And for me, I experienced quite a lot of anxiety, quite a lot of loneliness in those sort of early weeks and months of motherhood. How common is that?
So what you're describing is really, really common. We hear from a lot of women, and we've seen it in the research we've done over the last few years as well. Lots of new mums are just really hit by the experience of that early postnatal period. And even people who've like really put lots of time and energy into trying to prepare beforehand still talk about feeling really unprepared. A lot of people, that can be an incredibly challenging time, and it can take weeks to adjust and feel like you're sort of starting to come out of that early stage of adjusting to it all. But for others, it can really go on, and it can lead to significant anxiety. And we know that mental health issues are really common. So around 1 in 10 women will experience some form of mental health issue after birth. And I think one of the things we've really learned in all of that listening and research is that it's okay to focus on yourself and think about your relationships and think about your identity. That's not selfish. We need a safety net afterwards as well, because however much you prepare, you can never quite fully prepare for the reality of being a new parent.
I think that's really interesting what you're saying about it's not selfish to want to still be connected and be in the world and feel like you're part of the life that you had before you became a parent. What would you suggest for people to sort of keep themselves in the world like that?
It's really important to remember that your own well-being, your own mental health, is really important to your baby too and their development. There was some research by the Royal Foundation quite recently, I'm not sure if you saw it, that said only 10% of new parents said that in their preparation they thought about their own well-being. So much focus on birth and afterwards so much focus on the baby. But your own mental health, your own well-being matters enormously.
If we're going to talk about sort of managing the juggle, how you dedicate yourself to parenthood whilst also maybe maintaining a hand in work or your friendships or your hobbies, is there a way that people can kind of think about that juggle in a way that doesn't make it overwhelming?
Oh, the juggle. That's something we'd all like to win at, isn't it? I think, you know, that's the first thing, isn't it? Recognising it is incredibly difficult and there's a period of adjustment. So not being too hard on yourself, giving yourself time to find out what works, and people will take a different amount of time to go through that adjustment. For some people it can feel very quick, for others it might take, you know, really months, years to fully adjust. Looking for those small things, the small actions that you can take to really connect with yourself and others around you and your relationships.
I remember there being quite a big thing about the 6-week check. This was a sort of NCT campaign that I was particularly interested in at the time, because at the 6-week check, there is meant to be a maternal mental health check. Has that happened? Has anything changed? If you go in 6 weeks postpartum, is there an opportunity for you to discuss how you're feeling as well as how your bits are healing and how big your baby is?
So the Hidden Half campaign really talked about how important it is that there's a check for the new mum as well as for the baby. And in the research before the campaign, we were hearing that that really wasn't happening. There really wasn't much time. There wasn't the space. The questions weren't being asked in all cases, and a lot of focus on the baby, but not necessarily on the mum. And we were really pleased that that campaign was successful and got dedicated time for GPs to be able to really have those conversations with women at the 6-week check.
It is nice to know, even to just feel sort of armed with the knowledge that at that check you should be offered the space and opportunity to talk about your feelings. And like you say, it's not selfish. It's not taking away from the attention on your child to talk about how you're feeling, both mentally and physically.
Absolutely not. And one of the things we hear related to that is that many women talk about feeling like they're failing. So when they have these feelings in the early weeks and months, they think that they personally are failing. You know, recognising that so many people have these experiences and these feelings. Talk about it. It might be that talking about it is enough.
I think there is a tendency or to feel as a new mother, particularly, that you're getting slightly pushed out of public life, that, you know, you're taking up too much room in cafes when they were open, that you're too loud on the bus, that you are clogging up the path in a park. And I kind of wanted to say to you, do you have any advice on how you kind of confront those feelings and actually sort of just accept your public place and to not feel like you have to, you know, not feel that motherhood is something you're imposing on the world and that not all mothers are going to be the same and experience things in the same way. And so if you need to fill up your cup and meet your friends and go out into nature, then you can do that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, let's get that message across. It's really hard though, isn't it? Because actually, if you're not feeling confident about doing that, if you're feeling like you're imposing, I mean, the evidence shows many women feel judged as well about the way they're doing things or decisions they might be taking. So if you're feeling like that, it doesn't really help, does it, to have people say, come on, just get out there, just be confident. Because it's easier said than done. But I think one thing we know can really help is finding others to be with, finding other people who are going through that adjustment at the same time, talking about it. There's some amazing volunteer-led, you know, activities, groups, walk and talks at the moment. We might not be able to get into cafes and groups and classes, but our volunteers are leading walk and talks all over the country. And we're really hearing how people are saying, oh, my goodness, just talking to other people who are going through it has lifted me. I can feel the anxiety lifting and
it's such a good, I remember the first time I had to go into a supermarket with a baby and it feeling all honestly like climbing the Matterhorn, thinking, how am I logistically with my giant rucksack and this baby in a sling and my chest exploding with milk? How am I going to get round all the aisles? You know, and that is something. I was a woman in my 30s. I don't like to brag, but I'd been to supermarkets before. This shouldn't, you know, but it felt really intimidating.
Yeah, and you feel like everyone's looking at you. You just feel so self-conscious when in actual fact, you know, probably most people haven't even looked to see what...
And all they want to do is say your baby is cute on the whole.
Yes.
You know, that's what all people want to do. What are some of the sort of most common things that people call up asking for sort of help and advice with?
It depends when you're talking to people. So I think antenatally, people can have a lot of questions and it's all about preparation and thinking about birth and that early postnatal period. And then afterwards comes this big like, wow, sort of, is this normal? Am I? What should be happening? So it, you know, it does really depend when you speak to people. But whatever bit of parenting it is, I think that is what I'm experiencing normal. Is this okay? How should I? It's a very common theme in it.
Yes. Am I normal and am I doing it right? Are two questions that you could almost sort of, I think, at any point in a parenting journey, fire out from anyone, because that's what we're sort of wondering all the time, isn't it?
And I think, you know, a lot of what our practitioners will try and do with that is help parents see that actually there might not be a normal or a right or wrong. And actually, it's about your confidence and the sort of listening and helping people to find their own way through and come to their own decision can be really empowering. And then you can sort of take a bit more confidence forward.
What a great place to end things. Thanks so much for listening and for joining me back here in my little reed bed by the river. It was really nice to have the chance to dig into all this stuff with Pandora and Sarah. So thank you to both of them for their time and their conversation. And thank you to Rich, my producer, for another stellar job. Next week's guest is the utterly tremendous journalist, author and mother, Saima Mir. Saima and I will be talking about maternal fury, rage against the system and the anger that dares not speak its name. So come back next Friday for that. If you've enjoyed this podcast, and actually even if you haven't, please subscribe and leave me a glowing 5-star review so more people can find it. It makes a massive difference, it feels great and it's completely free.
This is a brand new audio production.